A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brialso Lake puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three. Covers by 20.
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans. For Cougar fans. It's Cougar Sports Saturday. Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, Cougar fans, and welcome inside another edition of Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. And however and wherever you're listening, we appreciate you spending some time with us this afternoon. And man, do we have a jam-packed show as always here in the dog days of off-season, Mitch. We're going to have Brett Pine on in hour number three. He's a communications director down for the football team at BYU. He's going to preview Media Day, which happens next week. That's really, Mitch, that first landmark moment as we inch closer to actual football. So I'm excited to hear from him and get a preview of what we can expect for Media Day.
Yeah, and there was also a landmark moment in college football this week as the College Football Playoff Working Group proposed a 12-team playoff. We're going to talk about that a lot more and what it means for BYU and the sport of college football with College Football Insider Brett McMurphy. So, loaded show for the next 3 hours from 12 to 3 here on KSL News Radio. And if you want to connect with us, feel free to text us on the KSL UCCU text line 57500. You can also hit us up on Twitter at KSL Sports, Biamonte, Matt, and Mitch underscore Harper. So, a lot of different ways to get in touch with us. And also download the KSL Sports app presented by University Federal Credit Union. But we got to start things off with that college football playoff news right here in the leadoff.
The leadoff. A look at the stories making headlines right now. It's time for the leadoff on Cougar Sports Saturday.
Mitch said it best, but it is a moment in the history of college football that we're going to remember for a long, long time, where a proposal was submitted that the college football playoff will expand to 12 teams. Now, it still needs to be approved, and there's still a few more check marks along the way before this comes official. And when will that take effect? All those things need to be figured out, the T's crossed and the I's dotted. But it appears, Mitch, that college football is expanding that 4-team playoff all the way to 12 teams. And when you first saw this news, what was your initial reaction?
I was shocked because I never thought in my wildest dreams that college football would actually go to a 12-team playoff. I thought maybe eight, you know, but I never thought we'd see the day where there's a 12-team college football playoff, and it's incredible. And I think that the pandemic has highlighted that this could happen, because we always heard in college football, the powers that be in the sport, well, we can't have a playoff because it would impact finals week in December. It would impact their studies in January. And it would just, there's these logistical nightmares that they just couldn't do a college football playoff with more than four teams. It just couldn't be done. And to think now that the pandemic highlighted, hey, yeah, you can play a game on December 19th. Like, they were playing random Big Ten games in mid-December just to fulfill TV inventory.
Yep.
Yeah, it can be done. College football can be played with a playoff, and it can be in the middle of December, and it can also be played into January. It can be done, and it's a huge thing for the sport. I think this is a great thing for college football to have a 12-team playoff. It makes the sport national again, because for the longest time, it's just been a game pretty much focused in the southeast region of the country.
I have such mixed feelings about this, and later on here in hour number one, we're going to get to how does this impact BYU. So how you guys think this is going to impact BYU. We want to hear from you, so text us 57500. I have mixed feelings because on one hand, I think this does improve what is probably the worst postseason in big-time sports. It hasn't been good forever. And as we've seen with this 4-team playoff, I still don't think it's great. It's definitely better than when sports writers were voting on it, and it's probably better than the BCS, but it's still not there. Where I have mixed feelings, you just touched on some of those things. I sort of feel for the student-athlete here because they have clearly prioritized money to the point where they don't care about anything. They don't care about school schedules. They don't care about playing extra games, what kind of toll that's going to take on an athlete. Now, I know that they can train and do all these things, but they still have to go to school. So they're going to be asked to play an old NFL schedule. Assuming you get to the championship game, you're going to be playing 16 games. That's a lot when you're not – that's not your full-time job. You're splitting that time with being in school. So I struggle with that part of it just from the student-athlete perspective. And then here's what I think really concerns me. And we'll have a greater discussion about this, Mitch, but I still have a concern about the quality of what we're getting in the regular season. And what I mean by that is, what incentive is there going to be under this proposal to go out of conference and play big games? Because I just don't see it. Because under this proposal, the top six conference champions, and now that does include G5, the top six highest-ranked conference champions, you're in. And the top four, you get a bye. So the first round will be 5-12 and so on and so forth. What incentive does an Alabama or a Clemson have? Because Clemson, you got to give them credit. They've played some nice out-of-conference games. I think they have Georgia this year. What incentive do they have to play that game? They're just going to stick around in South Carolina, maybe Citadel, maybe Coastal Carolina, if they're still a good program. So we're going to lose all these interesting non-conference games, and we're only going to get those in the bowl game. And that would have a big impact on BYU, Mitch.
Yeah, the Alabamas, the Clemsons, the Ohio States, they're probably going to be in the playoff before even playing a snap. Like, they already are already.
Yep.
Now it's a lock because they're not going to lose more than two games. Like, it's just, as long as the coaches and the current structure is in place with Dabo and Saban, they're going to just be a well-oiled machine, and it's not slowing down. That's fine. But, like, I love the fact that it's now there's opportunities for those group of five teams to have a Cinderella story. Like, it's been so crazy to me in college football. It's the one sport that doesn't embrace the Cinderella. You know, in college basketball, it's great to see Cinderella make a run and those stories that emerge from that. I think that's fantastic because anytime a BCS buster happens, it's always met with, well, that Power 5 team or BCS team, they didn't want to be there. You know, now it's like that. You can't use that excuse now. If Cincinnati or if BYU goes in and beats a Georgia, that you wanted to be there. The national championship is at stake. So I like that component. You mentioned the 16 games, though. I think that's not really an issue because in the FCS ranks where Weber State's at, you're going to play a 16-game season in the current playoff system that they have, and it's worked out just fine for them. And they have less scholarship athletes in the FCS. They got 65 compared to 85. So I really think that's a moot point. I think the players, they want to play and play at the highest level and have games mean something. I think this strengthens the regular season, honestly.
I don't know if that's true, Mitch. Can you say players want to play at the highest level? There's guys who were playing at the highest level and sat out. I just think it's hard to compare FBS and FCS because FCS guys, Mitch, they're one or two are going to the NFL. Those guys, they want to play as many games as they can because that's the end of the road for them as athletes.
But you look at like Florida last year in the Cotton Bowl. They didn't even care to be in the Cotton Bowl. Like, the Cotton Bowl is a prestigious bowl game, tons of history. Anyone that's watched college football over the years, they love that game. They didn't care to be there. Like, they've been opting out because there was nothing at stake in the postseason. It's a terrible postseason in college football. This, there's actual motivation to have a chance to play for the national championship. 12 teams can win it. I love it. I love the six automatic bids to the highest-ranked conference champs and the six at-larges. There's no cap for conferences. So the SEC, if you want to get five teams in and you got that chance, you can do it. I think this is almost as close to a perfect system as you can potentially have for college football that has 130 teams. I think it's a great system. I think it's great.
I like that more teams have the opportunity, but there's still a lot of things that need to get figured out, in my opinion, to retain the integrity of college football, because we've already seen that the committee situation hasn't worked, in my opinion. There's got to be a metric that helps you place these teams, 1 through 12. There needs to be incentive for teams to maintain scheduling throughout the year and playing meaningful football. You can't just punt on the non-conference and then play a schedule in conference, which in, if we're being real, if we look at last year, some of these conference schedules weren't even good. The SEC schedule wasn't great. You get Alabama to get credit for beating an LSU, but if you had a metric, let's say like college basketball, which we've discussed, that'd be what, a quad three?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe quad two? And then we wouldn't be, oh, well, Alabama doesn't need to play anybody because they just got the SEC. Well, that's not always true. So I still think there's things that need to be resolved. But overall, I do like that the Cinderella element will be there. I do think we're not going to see more than one, though. I have a hard. I don't think there's going to be the benefit of doubt down at number 12 where it's Coastal or Iowa State. I still think it's going to be one, but one is better than none. So it is a step in the right direction, but we still got to fix some things in college football.
Yeah, if you got the human committee still determining these 12 teams, they're going to fudge the numbers to make sure the group of five only has only one team.
Absolutely.
And you know, and you can text us your thoughts on the college football playoff. What do you think of this playoff proposal? Again, it's going to be officially voted on come June 22nd. So later this month is when it could officially go be approved. And then when it actually takes place, we'll find out more about that with Brett McMurphy coming up a little bit later. But we got to take a break, though. We'll talk more about this, about what it means for BYU, their future with independence. We'll discuss all of that next. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio, your legacy home of the BYU Cougars. It's 12:24 p.m., June 12th, 12 weeks till BYU football is back. They'll face the Arizona Wildcats, and 12 continues to be a theme today as 12-team playoff is in the news. And what does it mean for BYU football, Matt? Is this a situation where in this proposed 12-team playoff where you have six automatic bids for the highest conference champions, which means a guaranteed spot for a group of five champion, do you feel like BYU might need to consider going back to a group of five league now?
They need to do more than consider. They need to go if nothing changes.
Think so.
Now, I do think this. Things are not equal in the bigger conferences in college football, and maybe this pushes everyone to get on the same playing field, which I think could benefit BYU, because how do you adequately place people if teams aren't playing the same number of conference games, strength of schedules out of whack? How do you judge all those things? That's why we keep talking about college football and just where's the metric? How do we make things equal across the board when evaluating teams and conferences like we have in college basketball? We don't have it. So if nothing were to change, then in my opinion, you have to join a G5 league. You have to go because the opportunity's there, and I think BYU can build a program good enough in today's day and age where you are on par or better than Boise to where you're the favorite to go every year. I mean, there was a period where Boise State was going, what, two out of 3 years they were playing in a BCS bowl game. BYU could get to that level if they joined the AAC or even the Mountain West.
We asked you on Twitter, and it's our poll of the day, poll question of the day, if the college football playoff expands to 12 teams, what should BYU do in the future in regards to conference affiliation? Remain independent, hope for a P5 invite, or join a group of five league? 49% of you saying hope for a P5 invite, 29% say join a G5 league. Kind of split. Like I think, because honestly, I feel like most BYU fans, they have came around on independence. I don't hear as much whining about independence as much as maybe early on because it was so new and the schedules weren't great. And I can understand why people were upset seeing a bunch of whack teams come on the schedule. Like it was just a shock to the system. It just didn't add up. It didn't make sense. You didn't know what you're playing for. But I think now as the schedules have gotten better, as we've seen this year coming up, independence is, people are warming up to it. But still, I think the ultimate goal has got to be to have a chance to play in that playoff. And I don't think BYU wants to be that one team that doesn't have access. You know Notre Dame is going to have access. They are not a typical independent. But BYU and Army, they might not have access to this thing. And we know how the committee, as currently constructed, views a BYU that doesn't play a good schedule. And they could always look at BYU's schedule and say, you know what? Like, say, example this year, Virginia. Well, Virginia had their third-string quarterback. That wasn't as good of a win as we think. You know, like, they can always kind of twist the numbers. And also because they're not part of the power structure. BYU, financially, they don't get a huge cut. You look at the money streams right now in the current playoff, $1.5 million is divided up amongst BYU, UMass, UConn, New Mexico State. It's the independent's not named Notre Dame. So they don't want to give a massive payday, a playoff cut, to BYU, who currently is outside the system. I kind of worry about that. I feel like BYU, with the schedules being tough, it's hard to go undefeated ever. I mean, period, they've only done it once in their history. But to do with a loaded 7-8 game schedule with Power 5 opponents where you don't have maybe a fourth the budget of those teams, it's difficult.
Keep the tweets coming. Keep the texts coming. 57500. We'll get to that on the other side. But we got to take a break and get ready for Brett McMurphy. He was all on top of this story. We'll get his reaction to the news and what he thinks BYU should do as well. So we'll take the break. News, traffic, and weather up next, and then we'll have Brett McMurphy on after that.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three. Cougars by 20.
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday. Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back to Cougars Sports Saturday. It's June 12th, 12:36 here in Salt Lake City, Utah. And however and wherever you're listening, we appreciate it. All this first hour, we're reacting and breaking down to the news that the college football playoff will be expanding, likely, very likely expanding to 12 teams. And right now, we want to bring on America's college football insider at Stadium Network, Brett McMurphy. And Brett, let's just start with the initial moment you found out that this was going to become likely that the college football playoff would expand to 12 teams.
I think it was a great move. I knew it would expand. I didn't think it would expand before the current contract extended after the 2025 season. But the fact that they've come out with the press release, they're going to have meetings this summer. They've actually been talking about this for 2 years. Certainly fans are for it, ADs, coaches, everybody's for it. I was excited because I think, we're going to have this playoff after the 2023 regular season. They've said we can't have it this year, obviously. They can't have it next year. And the reason why they'll start it in 2023 is basically the current college football playoff is 4 3-year cycles as far as the bowls with the New Year's Six rotating the semifinals. So we just finished year one of the latest 3-year cycle. So they'll finish year two, year three, and then I fully expect we'll have a 12-team format in 2023. And then you guys get a debate why number 13 got screwed and got left out of the field.
Brett McMurphy's our guest, and Brett, Mitch Harper here. And you know, I got to think with this college football playoff, it's amazing to think it's coming, it's happening, because for the longest time, the powers in this sport wouldn't even say the P word. Like, playoff wasn't a thing, and now we've got to 12. Just how much of a role did the pandemic have in highlighting some of these flaws that were always talked about as talking points as to why they can't have the playoff expand? How much of a role did that play into all this, you think?
You know, I think it certainly contributed, but I think even if last year was regular, there was no pandemic, I still think we would have got to this point. Again, Jack Swarbrick, the Notre Dame AD, said that the management committee had been actually discussing an expanded playoff for the last 2 years. Last year, I did a survey of all 130 athletic directors, and 84% were in favor of expanding the playoff. You can't get 84% of people to agree that the sky's blue. So I thought that was pretty telling that you've got people in those powers of position or position of power that they wanted to expand. So the only question then was how many? Would it be 8? Would it be 12? Would it be 16? I initially thought they would go to 8. I think most people did because that makes sense. But then the more you look at 12, I think that's the smart move because now, again, there's no automatic bids. No conference is guaranteed a bid. But 6 conference champs are guaranteed a slot. And so basically that means a non-Power 5 conference champ will be guaranteed in every year. And so that way you can't worry about any lawsuits or Congress meddling into it from the group of 5 saying they were shut out. And, you know, last year, for example, Coastal Carolina, the Sun Belt, and Cincinnati from the American would have been in the playoff, and the Pac-12 would not have had a representative. So Power 5 conference champ is not guaranteed to be in it. And so we'll have to see how it plays out.
Brett McMurphy's our guest here on Cougar Sports Saturday, and obviously, Brett, we cover BYU What do you think BYU will have to do going forward if this gets approved, which we all think it will? Can they remain independent, or will this push them to join any conference that will have them?
Well, it's the good news is in the 14 format, BYU or any non-Power 5 school was never going to make the playoff. I mean, you can give me a million scenarios, and I'd say no. So now, basically, all BYU has to do, and not like it's easy, but there is a path, and that is to finish as one of the top 12 ranked teams in the country, and you will get a bid. How easy is that? It's not easy. Certainly, the schedule that you guys would have played before the pandemic, if you would have had success, a 10-2 record with that previous schedule, I think you would have been up in the mix. Can you play that schedule every year? Is that realistic? I don't know. I would say, though, it's actually easier, I think, if BYU was in the Mountain West, because if for any of the Group of Five conferences, for instance, if you're Cincinnati, Houston, UCF, or whatever in the American, those guys no longer have to be better than Alabama, LSU, or Florida. All they have to do is be the best of the rest of the non-Power 5 leagues. And if you win your conference and you're better than the Sun Belt, you're better than Conference USA, you're better than the MAC, you're in the field. So you're somewhere in the field. And then you win a couple of games, and who knows what can happen. So I don't think this is necessarily going to cause BYU to run to the Mountain West, say, hey, we want back in. But long term, it could be something to look at. But at least with the expanded playoff, I think BYU's playoff chances increased tremendously as opposed to the old system, where basically you guys had to play the Packers, the Cowboys, Alabama twice and go 12-0 to get in the top four. So now you've got a fighting chance.
What talks, if any, Brett, have maybe centered around how the selection committee could look in a 12-team format era, or have those conversations not even taken place yet? What's the latest there?
It'll be the same as the previous playoff. The selection committee will go through the same process. They'll do the same rankings every week, but certainly there will be more attention to spots after number four. And also, again, it will get tricky because, for instance, last year, Oklahoma ranked number six in the final college football playoff ranking. But based on the new format, they would have actually got the four seed as the fourth highest rated conference champion, and they would have got a first round bye. So you could have some teams that finish in the top four that don't win their conference. They're in the playoff, but they're not going to get that first round bye. However, they will get a host one of those first round games on campus.
Brett McMurphy's our guest for a few more moments here on Cougar Sports Saturday, and you talked about how there's greater access for the Group of Five and the BYU. What negative impact could this have, if at all, on college football, maybe scheduling? What are your thoughts on that, Brett?
That's a great question. I hope I'm wrong, but I think the Power Five is going to be less likely to play Group of Five schools now. Because if you're a Power Five school, why in the world would you play a Group of Five school? Because if you beat a Group of Five school, it's not going to help your resume. And as you guys have noticed, there's been a lot of Power Five programs announcing home and homes, most notably Alabama is doing a home and home with Oklahoma State, with Boston College. So they're beefing up their schedule with Power Five teams. To be honest, if I'm a Power Five AD, I would never play a Group of Five school that could beat me. I'm just being honest. There's nothing that I gain out of that game. Look, it sucks for the non-power leagues, but I think that's how it is. On the flip side, though, I actually think if we have this conversation 5 years from now, I would be fascinated to look at how many of the middle-tier Power Five schools have fired their coaches. And by that, I mean, we're going to have 12 teams in the playoff. Bob Bowlesby, the Big 12 commissioner, talked about how much he didn't realize it would impact schools and conferences by not getting into the playoff. Always seeing those TV commercials, who's in, who's out. So now you're going to 12 teams. So now there's going to be even additional pressure to get in to that playoff. Well, if you're Tennessee in the SEC or you're West Virginia in the Big 12, I think, you know, BYU, I think Boise State, I think UCF, they all have easier access to getting into the playoff because all they have to do is basically win their conference. Obviously, BYU has to get in the top 12, same as a West Virginia or Tennessee does. But BYU is not butting heads with Alabama, Florida, LSU, you know, all those schools. So I think when we get 5 years down the road, and you know how fickle fans are going to say, hey, look, we've had a 12-team playoff for 3 or 4 years, and Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, they've been it every year, da-da-da. And Coastal Carolina's been in it, and Boise State's been in it twice, and UCF's been in it, and they pulled off an upset. And Cincinnati's been in it, and here we are, and we can't even get to the playoff. We need to get rid of our coach. I hope I'm wrong with that. Maybe I am, but I know how fans are, and I know how much emphasis is going to be put on a bigger playoff field. And so I think actually the group of five is in a much better situation than the non-Alabama, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Clemson Power Five schools.
Last thing for you, Brett, before we let you go on this Saturday afternoon, we appreciate you spending so much time with us. Do you feel that this playoff expanding to 12 could have any potential impact in the future in realignment? And I ask that because of TV deals coming up in coming years, 2024, 2025. Do you feel like this can keep the conferences where they're at right now and not have to create an expansion sort of scenario?
First, I want to say I'm disappointed you wait until the last question to bring up conference realignment. Come on, guys. Are you slipping on me? What's going on?
It's a BYU fixture, Brett.
I know. It's usually the first question. Wait, come on.
We saved it best for last.
Is this a clown show? What's going on? Actually, you know what? Sorry, I'm outside. It's a little windy. Actually, I think, and you may not want to hear this, actually, I think this kills conference realignment. And the reason is, let's say Boise State, we'll take them for instance. They've been talking to the American. They had some talks that didn't go any further. But if you're Boise State, why would you go to the American? It's tougher competition than the Mountain West. And so if you go to the American, there's no guarantee you're going to win that league. If you're in the Mountain West, you're probably going to win that league. And then all you have to do is you have to be better than the American champ, the Sun Belt champ, et cetera, to get into the playoff. So I don't see any conferences looking to grab teams. Now, obviously, if BYU would go to the Mountain West, that would boost up the Mountain West. That would make the Mountain West stronger. So maybe there's some interest there. But I think ultimately it would boil down to, you know, what does Tom Holmoe think about, you know, scheduling, having an independent schedule and being able to play 3, 4, 5 Power Five schools, as opposed to going and playing a Mountain West schedule and then finding any Power Five schools you can. I know he's done a great job scheduling Power Five schools, but with this new 12-team format and just with the way, like, literally every Power Five school is locking up home and homes down the road with other Power Five schools, it seems like, you know, they won't want to play a BYU because a loss to BYU kills them. And a win is like, okay, well, they're not a power school. You're supposed to beat them. So I think, personally, that we're not going to see any expansion, I don't think, or conference realignment. Because also the Power Five schools, they have no reason to go add somebody because it's not going to add any overall value to the league per school. And, you know, quite frankly, now that doesn't mean something weird happens and Texas goes over. You know, Oklahoma goes to the Big Ten. I mean, if you're talking about the elite programs, yeah, in some weird scenario, I guess if for whatever reason they wanted to change from one Power Five league to another Power Five league, I guess that would be possible. But I don't think all the realignment that we've seen in the past, 6, 10 years, teams skipping to other conferences, almost a merry-go-round atmosphere, I really don't see that happening. I think it'll quiet down. So that's probably not the answer you wanted, and maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I see it, at least for the next 5 years.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how this all changes the landscape of college football. He's America's College Football Insider with the Stadium Network. He is Brett McMurphy. Brett, enjoy your summer, and crazy to think next week BYU kicks off the Media Day circuit, so we're just around the corner from the season, so we look forward to your coverage.
Hey, Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
It's Brett McMurphy here on Cougar Sports Saturday on KSL News Radio. Taking a break, we'll talk more about BYU and the playoff coming up next. It's Cougar Sports Saturday on KSL News Radio.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday. Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday here, hour number two. And thanks for joining us here on Cougar Sports Saturday. And, man, cannot wait for this next week. We got Media Day rolling up in hour number three. Brett Pine, a director of communication at BYU, he'll come on to talk about the history of Media Day and what this means. And Media Day is kind of taken on a weird tone. I think there is this expectation that it's going to be more exciting than it actually is. And I think the reason it was initially exciting, Mitch, was because it was so new. Like, there were so many things to announce. And now BYU is a decade in, there's not much to announce. And you know, Tom Holmoe talks about this all the time. When scheduling agreements are ready to be announced, then he announces them. Like, you don't just stash them away until media day. And so, but it's still fun to get down there. I think that's what's so exciting for you and I, is that we get to be down there face-to-face, back in our element, talking with these guys, getting great content for the rest of offseason, which will benefit you, the BYU fans, and then boom, we're into fall camp. So we'll preview that in hour number three. But right now we're reacting to the 12-team college football playoff expansion where, man, when we look at the poll, I think I'm with Ryan Cummings here. He tweeted us. You can tweet us at kslsports.com. He says, joining a G5 and hoping for a P5 aren't mutually exclusive. Join a G5 doesn't disqualify them from being considered for future P5 expansion realignment. Thing is, as Brett stated, and I agree with him, what's the motivation? As currently constructed, now let's all knock on wood and hope that cooler heads prevail and say, hey, we need to figure some stuff out. Like, this is great for the postseason. And it is.
Yeah.
It really is. But this is going to have a negative impact in other ways. We gotta fix that so it doesn't break all of college football just to get to a 12-team playoff. But as of right now, Mitch, when I look at that poll question, I'm like, get to a G5 league. And we were just discussing off air, maybe what you did with the original Mountain West is the right path here going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it would be – BYU's got a history when it comes to creating leagues, the WAC, the Mountain West Conference. BYU has always created leagues, maybe in this hypothetical, create a super group of five league where it's Boise, UCF. I mean, again, just kind of getting creative here, because I do think that this 12-team playoff, like Brett McMurphy told us, it does give BYU access. And again, I think that – you know, the good thing for BYU is they got a lot of games loaded up, already built in on future schedules. And you hope that those games remain on the schedule and some of these teams don't back out. They honor the commitment, because BYU is always good for honoring the commitment. BYU is always a partner that they're going to work with another team and be cordial. And they're not going to, you know, they're going to try to make it right, a win-win for everyone. So hopefully those games still happen. But, you know, it's a tricky situation because – I mean, when I hear from Brett McMurphy that the playoff committee is probably going to stay as is, that's sound the alarm. Like, I'm concerned about that, because we saw how Gary Barta and that crew, like, not even just BYU, Florida lost to a terrible LSU team last year, and they moved up in front of Cincinnati, who was, like, undefeated. Like, how is that possible? It didn't make sense. So it's just the Power 5 Invitational, and the Group of 5 team will be the 11 or 12 seed just to avoid legal lawsuits. It is what it is. But I feel like BYU fans want BYU so bad to have access to a national title. I know that they've won one. And in 84, it was amazing in the AP poll era. And it was a glorious time. Like, it's amazing to think that they got that done. But I feel like this program deserves a path in some shape or form to the highest levels of the sport, because BYU is a program that always shakes up every system, the Alliance, the poll system, the BCS back in 2001, and even last year with the playoff, they kind of shaken things up. They've always pushed the needle. And it's just like, I hope with this new iteration, whatever that ends up being, I would love it to be independence, because how sweet would it be to do it on your own dime and you do it on your own path and you somehow break the system and get into that thing? It would be so awesome. But it's just, when you got a human element component, it feels like the trends that we've seen in this playoff is they just go with the brands. Like, even TCU and Baylor got pushed out 1 year just because, well, you're not Ohio State. I mean, this is what it felt like.
Yeah.
And then they use these terms like, well, this strength of schedule, this. It's like, come on. Like, you're going with the biggest brand. So, you know, you got to hope for the best, and you hope that BYU's got a plan in place, but you do got to get creative with it. We got a texter coming in, 3933, says the Cougars should stay independent. I think it's the perfect fit. You know, independence is such a great fit for BYU because they are their own unique entity. They're a religious institution. They kind of think different than a lot of these public institutions out there, but I think this is the one area where you do have to kind of explore Group of Five more than ever before.
I think Texter 3933 is dead wrong. I think it's never been what they've wanted. And I think BYU would admit that we don't want to be independent. We want to be...
You think so?
Yeah. I think if BYU, if you said, hey, magic wand, I will grant... Aladdin. They get the genie.
Never had a friend like me, yeah.
They get the genie, and he says, I'm only giving you one wish. Do you want to be in the Big 12? Or do you want to be independent?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
But, like, I think it's better independence than the Mountain West, like the volatile Mountain West that was always looking to...
It was until a couple days ago.
I'd still want to go independent than
If you go to the Mountain West, you have a 50% chance, if not better, of going to the playoff
every
league,
year. That league, they still have... There just feels like... I know Tom Homo mentioned last December about, or last football season, when they got the Boise State and San Diego State games, how the relationship with the Mountain West has improved. It's a positive development, honestly. But it really is, because when BYU left that league, when BYU left that league, it was so toxic. Like 10 years ago, it was so toxic. Like, those teams never wanted to play BYU. And the fact that they're willing to schedule them now, I think speaks to, like, wounds have been healed a little bit. But still, like, those fan bases, man, that's just tough to deal with. Like,
why would anyone in the Mountain West schedule BYU? Because BYU...
Going forward?
Yeah.
Oh, well, first off, they're going to give you a sellout. Because Boise State, like, as good of a program as they are, they never fill up their stadium unless BYU comes into town.
Who cares? If Boise State goes undefeated,
they're... Well, that money matters. Would you get a home team against BYU? Like, if New Mexico schedule BYU, that's a pet sellout.
Does it matter more than getting the money from going to the playoff?
Well, I think that money still, like, pales in comparison. You still got to have some, like, weekly games that excite your fan base. Because even though there's still going to be more access for everyone... Like, there's still only going to be a select group of teams every year, a select brands that are going to actually be in the mix. Like, in the Group of Five, it's going to be probably Boise, UCF, Cincinnati, Houston. Like, that's about it. Like, that's really, like, there maybe a Coastal emerges once in a while, but it ain't going to be New Mexico. Like, I've seen that song and dance. Like, they're not doing it. Like, no way. Like, that program, if they don't have Rocky Long, like, nope, not happening.
I'm convinced, just from talking to Brett and just thinking about this more and more, they got to create their own new foot. They don't have to branch from the WCC.
Yeah.
This just needs to be a football only situation.
That's important to note.
That's because you don't need to rewrite the wheel here. You just need to go out and say, Cincy, San Diego, Boise, Houston, UCF. Let's go do this crazy football thing. And maybe it's the WAC. Maybe just the WAC is trying to... It's coming full circle.
BYU is Southern Utah in the WAC. Hey. Are you kidding me?
Hold on. Let me
ask Sam Houston State. Are you kidding me?
Don't tell me if they ran out in a retro Royal and they had the fat WAC on the jersey. You want to get a little nostalgic.
I want no part of that, Matt. I want no part of that.
How are we having this discussion? It's just, we're talking about one of the great programs in the history of college football having to maybe rejoin the WAC.
Well, I mean, we're just trying to get creative here. Totally. I mean, it's you think of all these scenarios. Because, I mean, again, maybe you just stay the path. Like, maybe BYU has formed enough relationships with independents, because I do believe that they have, in terms of, you know, these relationships with scheduling games. But I think it got a little bit exposed in the pandemic, where those relationships that you have formed that have been strengthened, and Tom almost mentioned that before, like, they had opportunities over the years with independents to just form great relationships with programs they've never had. But when push came to shove, they weren't willing to go to bat for BYU BYU was left out on their own and every game was wiped from the slate. No one, except for maybe Boise, was really willing to step in some Conference USA teams. Like, it was just kind of frustrating. And Coastal was a deal where it just, you know, they were undefeated. BYU was undefeated. Game day was there. If game day is not there, I don't think that game happens.
No.
I really don't. Like, no. Coastal wanted game day desperately.
Yeah. Yep.
And BYU was willing to play on a moment's notice. So I just feel like that's just difficult. And in this climate of, you know, religious, faith-based schools, they're sometimes polarizing to the academia and the religious or the education structures of society and higher education. BYU is polarizing sometimes, and that can rub people the wrong way too. Is it fair? No, because BYU is a fantastic university, a fantastic football program and athletic department. I mean, BYU, look across the board in athletics, they're one of the best athletic departments in the country this year. All their sports have been fantastic, but still, some believe like they come with baggage and this and that. It's just like it's a difficult road to hoe. And I think that this 12-team playoff will bring some hurdles once again to Independence, because it felt like with the 4-team playoff era, it's kind of been a well-oiled machine. Like, Independence has just been churning out great schedules. It's working nicely. They're getting the home games now. This is going to pose some new challenges, definitely coming up in the future.
And you touched on the 2020 season. That's exactly why I'm kind of freaking out a little bit, just because, you know, teams like even Army weren't even trying to get games back on the schedule. BYU was willing to do anything, and other teams weren't reciprocating it. I think Boise, shout out to them, because
that relationship seems really
good.
Yes,
that's a great relationship, and we need more of that in college football. But there was a lot of times where you just wondered, why isn't even, like, I think Army's a great case in point, but BYU is asking for games in December. Hey, we will help you beefing up the schedule to try and move up the rankings, and nobody was returning the call.
Yeah.
And that scares me going forward, where it's like, you know, hey, we respect you, but, like, why? You know, we don't have a reason to do it. It'll hurt us more than it'll help us. That's a scary proposition for BYU.
It's an interesting conversation. We could keep this thing rolling here on the text. We got a lot rolling in here. Texas on the UCCU KSL text line 57500. What do you feel about BYU's future in the 12-team playoff era coming up? This is Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three. Covers by 20.
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back into Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. KSL News Time, 1:36 PM. If you've missed any part of the show, Brett McMurphy interview, it's on our podcast feed. We're at the midway point of the program. Coming up in hour number three, we'll have Brett Pine, BYU Football Director of Communications, to preview BYU Media Day and also talk about the history of BYU Media Day, which takes place coming up on Thursday. It's the 10th BYU Media Day that's happened for the program. So it's pretty cool. It's a nice milestone for the program to have Media Day coming up on Thursday. And we'll be down there on location talking to the coaches and players and really looking forward to that. So Brett Pine coming up in hour number three. But right now, got to get to the top five.
The Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5. Mitch and Matt clash in a weekly battle of BYU sports knowledge. The Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5.
It's the Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5, brought to you by Economic Partners, Utah's premier business valuation and strategic consulting firm. Big BYU guys, so if you need a business valuation, contact econpartners.com. Love those guys. And now another guy we love, Dallin Kraft, longtime producer here at Cougar Sports Saturday, the maestro of the Top 5, and he's putting a couple Top 5 victories on his belt the last couple weeks.
Well, I'm not trying to, you know. The purpose of the game isn't for me to win, but sometimes, you know, sometimes it happens like that. So you kind of brought this up earlier. Today's June 12th, right? 12 weeks away from the start of the season.
iPhone 12 in my hand.
iPhone 12 there. We 12 teams in the playoff expansion, but I've got another 12 for you. How about 12 receiving touchdowns? That's what freshman tight end Isaac Rex had last season. Big season for Isaac Rex, who sort of emerged, put himself on the map. He's going to be a big target for whoever the starting quarterback's going to be this year, and I think he's going to get those targets, especially in the red zone. You look at where he's at after one season, 12 receiving touchdowns. he could end up in the record books. He's well on his way to join some of these lists. And today's list is the top five in career receiving touchdowns at BYU. This obviously includes wide receivers, tight ends, any pass catchers. And, you know, I was looking at Isaac Rex, and it's like, man, a couple good seasons, and I mean, he could be right up there. He's well on his way. So we're going to go through that, the top five in career receiving touchdowns.
Media day cannot come soon enough because I need an updated almanac. So
that's so true.
That is very true. Yes. Yeah, that would
That'd be so sweet. I love the PDF last year. It was great, but I need that hard copy, that spiral binding. Anyway, let's go.
Yeah, let's start with Matt this week. Matt, what is your first guess?
Wow, there's so many options here. You could go so many different directions. My heart is telling me Cody Hoffman's on this list.
Well, your heart's correct. He is number one.
Oh, yes,
so,
let's go.
How about that? 33 touchdowns at his during his time at BYU. Obviously, he's up there in a lot of those categories. I mean, single season, you look at that 2012 season with 100 receptions, 1,200 yards. He had multiple seasons with double-digit touchdowns, 10 receiving touchdowns in 2011 and then 11 in 2012.
And I thought there was going to be a game in his career where he had double-digit receiving touchdowns in a game. Remember that game against New Mexico State?
Yes. Five touchdowns in that game.
The James Lark game?
Yes.
Yes.
That was the game where you said, I don't ever want to hear about being bad in practice ever again. Because if you come out and just sling it like this, accurate, dropping dimes, you better get on the field.
It raised so many questions about earlier in the year because, like, oh, you know, what could have been maybe. But, yeah, Cody Hoffman was a stud. Like, that guy was so good. And I always point to just sometimes the recruiting flaws. Like, you know, I love the recruiting, Matt. It's like that guy was offered by BYU and Sacramento State. And I remember seeing him at BYU, like, in 2009. I'm thinking, who's that guy? Like, in fall camp and thinking, that guy looks impressive, and sure enough, he ended up being amazing at BYU. Heck of a career for Cody Hoffman.
No doubt. All right, to you, Mitch.
I'm going to go with Austin Colley.
Yes, another good guess. He's number two here on this list. 30 touchdowns in the career of Austin Colley. Played those three seasons, right? One pre-Mission 04, and then the 07, 08, 2008, that big season where he had 15 touchdown receptions. That's tied for the most in a single season in BYU history with Clay Brown from 1980. So obviously that big year, you know, plays a huge role there. But 30 touchdowns for Austin Colley.
Yeah, Austin Colley was a monster, and I always think Zach Colley. Shout out to Zach for getting Austin to BYU because I think he was going to go to Stanford. I think he was set on going to the Cardinal, and then he's like made a late official visit to BYU, and he's the best to ever do it. Hands down, best wide receiver in BYU football history, and he's a legend.
All right, back to Matt.
It's our first time being in the studio together in a long time, and, you know, you have to pay attention to the little things in this show, and Mitch was over there stroking his beard by the name of Clay Brown, so I'm just gonna eat that out of the way now. Clay Brown.
Yeah, I baited you into it.
Ah! A little gamesmanship here.
Yes,
I like
sir.
It. You know, Clay Brown had the big one season, but yeah, he's not even in on the top 10 here on this on these receiving touchdowns. So not quite, but a good guess.
Clay Brown was seen in like a random exotic location with Jim McMahon a couple months ago. I was like, that is awesome. It was the day of the Miracle Bowl anniversary, like the 40-year anniversary. I was like, that's sweet. Let's see. I'm going to go with Eric Drage.
There we go. We're rolling right down the list here. That's number three all-time at BYU. 29 receiving touchdowns for Eric Drage, and had a nice career early 90s era of BYU. Had a couple seasons with back-to-back 1,000-yard receiving seasons, back-to-back double-digit touchdowns for him in 91 and 92, and put in a nice career for BYU.
I'm pretty sure he's still playing minor league football. If you're out there, Eric, listening, I shout out to the Wasatch Rev, the Wasatch Revolution. I think he's still holding it down, playing some minor league football with Charlie Peterson and all those cats. But Eric Drage, you wouldn't suspect that guy's an alpha, a wide receiver one, but he was a stud with Ty Detmer. Yeah, Eric Drage was awesome.
All right, we go to Matt.
Let's go with a tight end for once, huh? Dennis Pitta.
Oh, wow.
Pitt is a good guess, but he does not end up here on this list.
Interesting. How about let's go with Margin Hooks?
Okay. Another good guess there.
Gordon Hudson?
How about Glenn Kozlowski?
Okay. Both of the last two names, by the way, top 10 guys, but not quite reaching the top.
Kozlowski and Hudson?
Kozlowski and Hudson, yeah.
Matt Bellini?
Okay. Let's think about this here for a second. How about we go, I'm trying to think here, Phil Odell.
Oh,
yeah, boy! Phil Odell!
Listen, so I gotta go give the list to Dave beforehand. We sort of discuss it, and he was like, I told him, this is going to be the one at the end where they, how do you guess this guy? When we go into the 60s, you guys never get that, but Phil Odell.
Yes.
Mitch from the top rope. Look at that.
Yes. Wow. Him and I want to guess the other one. Golden Richards?
Okay.
Phil Odell. Like he was I think one of the first All-Americans in BYU history, I want to say, and I think his daughter helps out with the football program today as like an assistant watching make sure no intruders come into practice. Phil Odell, a legend, a BYU great, kind of before like the Tommy Hudspeth era of BYU football when Mark Lyons was slinging the rock.
Absolutely, played 65-67 as BYU Hall of Famer, ended up in the NFL with the Detroit Lions, played a little over three seasons. That was a great pull, and that's a...
He's done it.
That's a dub on the top five, Mitch.
Wow. Thank you.
Look at that.
I'm excited about that. Back in the studio, so it feels like the first real win since March 2020.
I do have to add the final name on this list. Yeah. Phil Odell, fourth, 25 touchdowns for him. Fifth, Mitch Matthews.
Oh, wow.
24 career touchdowns for Mitch Matthews.
You know, it's interesting you say Mitch Matthews because I was thinking, okay, after Cody Hoffman, there's been no one.
Yep.
There's been no one that's sniffing that top five.
Right.
That's amazing. Like, Mitch Matthews, do we have to reevaluate his significance in his BYU career?
Because of the Hail Mary catch against Nebraska.
I mean, he was statistically pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize he was top five.
Absolutely. And he had a brief stint in the NFL, but, I mean, he was on the fringe of being an NFL-type receiver.
Yeah, he's with the Dolphins and the Vikings for a little bit. So, yeah, interesting. Mitch Matthews... he was dang good. Like that, what was it, 2015 season, his senior year. And I like, too, how Mitch Matthews, before the pandemic, like 2019, he was at like every BYU game on the sideline, the Tennessee game. I'm wearing my lucky shirt. Like, he loves BYU football. That's a big thing to me. Like, I love when the alums still stay invested in the program and they care about BYU football, the program today, because it could be easy to say, you know what, hey, Kalani wasn't my coach. I don't care. Like, it's just not the same. But he still cares. And, like, that's awesome.
And he played with a lot of quarterbacks, too. So we're talking his whole senior year was mostly Tanner. He had some Christian Stewart in there as well. Yep. So, I mean, in theory, he should have played it mostly with Taysom, but because of the injuries, he saw a lot of different QBs.
Yeah, that is a great point. That's a great list. Dallin, good stuff there. Big shout-out to you. Follow Dallin on Twitter. Lil Thoint. Still, is it Lil Thoint?
Yes.
Lil Thoint.
I don't think it'll change, okay. I'm going to be honest.
Top 5 always brought to you by Economic Partners, Utah's premier business valuation and strategic consulting firm. If you need a business valuation, contact econpartners.com. They're BYU MBAs, BYU fans, so hit them up at econpartners.com. We're taking a break. On the other side, we'll get some more of your texts. And also,
there's a good one, too.
BYU football and where they fit in the 12-team playoff. We'll talk about it next. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Covers by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back to Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio, your legacy home of the BYU Cougars. Coming up this Thursday, BYU Media Day. It's always an eventful day. And actually, 10 years ago this summer, BYU put together their first Media Day as an FBS independent and discussed the history of this fun event. We're joined now on the program by the Director of Communications for BYU Football Program, Brett Pine. And Brett, usually you're the man helping us coordinate interviews with this program. But now you're the person getting interviewed, so we're happy to have you today.
Yeah, it kind of feels a little bit weird, to be honest. Mitch and Matt, happy to be with you guys. But yeah, I'm happy to help set up a lot of guests for you guys. But I'm also happy that you don't always ask me to be on. But today will be a fun experience. Happy to talk to you.
Well, we'll get into the history of BYU Media Day in a second, Brett. But for our audience who maybe isn't familiar with your role with BYU football, I'm sure there's the diehards out there. They know who you are because you've been an institution with BYU for quite some time. But what does the director of communications do for the football program?
You know, we do a lot behind the scenes, as you know, like people like yourselves and ESPN and all the broadcasters and everybody that works behind the scenes to kind of make a game in the football program and these different events take place. So my role specifically, I spend a lot of time so as a communications director, there's a lot of things that are involved in what we're trying to do in terms of communicating to the public. And that involves obviously working with you guys in the news media and also in the, you know, our broadcast partners, ESPN, BYU TV, and helping facilitate basically what we're trying to achieve in partnership with them, be it the broadcast that we're putting out on, you know, live television or other programming and shows and facilitating information and guests and then in addition to that, obviously there's especially nowadays, there's a lot heavier role in what we're doing on our own with our website and social media and helping communicate all of those things. And we have, you know, a whole team of people that are all contributing towards all of this. So I'm just kind of one of the people in place that kind of makes that happen.
Brett, how has Media Day changed over this past decade? And what was it like getting ready for that first Media Day over 10 years ago?
You know, it's kind of interesting to think back that it's been, this is our 10th Media Day since it happened. And, you know, Matt, looking, you know, back at it, I mean, historically, you know, a lot of fans probably didn't realize when we started doing the Media Day, it wasn't that we were doing the Media Day so we can make, you know, a grand announcement every single time we're having a Media Day. But the evolution of it, and a lot of, you know, obviously, but the conferences will conduct their football Media Days and their other sports, basketball, that they did a lot of back in the day as well. But they'll conduct those Media Days during the summer where you'll have like someone in my role and the head coach and a player from the offensive side of the ball and a player from the defensive side of the ball. And we'll all go, you know, Mitch and I have talked about this, but we'll all go to Coronado or go to Vegas or we'll go somewhere where the conference is organized and planned this event. And our role of it is to kind of make sure our people are there and present and ready and all the media that cover the league converge there. And we provide opportunities for the media to gather information so that they can help promote what's going to be taking place coming up for the upcoming football season for the various teams. And so when BYU went independent in 2011, the 1st of July, we obviously were not participating with a conference media day any longer. And so we had developed the idea and the concept that we were going to have our own national media day where we would facilitate all of those, all of those same types of opportunities for the media to gather information about the team. But we just took a little different approach to it where we were by ourselves and we, instead of having a coach and a couple of players, you know, we involved the entire coaching staff. We invite, you know, a couple of dozen players representing the various position groups. And then we also, you know, had a strategy to reach out to fans and to do things partnering with BYU TV to have live programming during the day and other things that the fans can watch and participate in and learn more about the upcoming season and promote what's going to be happening and what is happening with BYU football. So yeah, it's hard to believe it's been that long, but that's kind of how it all got started back in 2011.
So was it a whirlwind, Brett, when you go from just two players and a coach at a conference media day to now how many players typically are at a media day. I mean, I've been to the last five or so, and there's usually dozens, it seems. How many players on average usually are at a media day?
Yeah, we probably typically have around 20 to 25 players participating in some fashion. As you know, what the fans probably don't know is like the behind the scenes breakout sessions and all the things that we're doing for the media, where the media are spending time talking with the coaches and the players or other guests or alumni and people that we bring back. And that's another component of what we do that, you know, adds another element where we have kind of tried to tie our program, not just with the present, but to our past as well with our media days. But those opportunities and the various chats and things we do on social media. So between all that's going on, there's usually a couple of dozen players and then the entire coaching staff that's all involved with it. In addition to, you know, we typically have around, you know, 50 to 70 media members that are also there participating and taking part in our media day.
Brett Pine, Director of Communications down at BYU, is our guest here on Cougar Sports Saturday. And you mentioned that your role and a lot of members on that staff are kind of behind the scenes stuff, Brett, but there is one area where you do get some face time, and that's on national TV when Kalani Sitake is getting interviewed. What has been one of the craziest moments, whether it be with Kalani or Bronco Mendenhall, just crazy moments you've experienced post game on a field where you're trying to coordinate interviews and doing what you do down there on the field?
You know, Matt, that's a great question. You know, I try to avoid the cameras typically, but sometimes, you know, when you're around the head coach, it's unavoidable. Yeah, that is a role that I play, you know, immediately after a game. There's things that we've been planning, working out with the TV networks all along. So, in the, you know, when we win the game, you know, I'm trying to get our coach and or star players, depending on, or both in many cases, to the exact spot on the field where I can get them to the interview for the ESPN reporter, whoever it is that might be waiting to conduct that interview. And so with our live broadcast partners, you know, there's some immediacy to what we try to do there to get those interviews on the air. And then in addition to that, you know, all the post game that we start taking place with you know, our radio network, with you guys and other members of the media that are covering the event and helping facilitate so that you guys are able to help share with all the fans, you know, what happened and get the perspective of our coaches and players on what just went down with the event. So yeah, it gets a little bit interesting there. You know, I think back to some things like our Nebraska game on that Hail Mary, and you have a plan. You know, if you win or you lose, it can vary because you won't have, you know, the immediacy maybe if you lose the game because the TV is going to talk with the winning team. And obviously in a game like that where it literally comes down to the very end, you have to have everything kind of ready. And I had made arrangements with ESPN and typically back in those days, like we didn't have access to the locker room after the game to, you know, have the TV cameras in there. And I'd arranged with Coach Mendenhall that, hey, if we win, you know, I think we should do this and have the TV cameras come and show the locker room right after. And so, you know, kind of worked out that plan because we won that game and it went crazy. And that locker room celebration and everything kind of went viral everywhere. So those are kind of little decisions, and we're working with the TV crew and they're texting me saying, are we good to go in the locker room? And I'm, you know, trying to make sure me or some of our staff's there to get them in and all that kind of stuff, just, you know, so that people can kind of see what's happening. So it gets a little hectic. A Tennessee game was kind of like that too. After the game, you know, you just have to scramble. You're not really able to be a fan as much as people might think because you got all these details to worry about.
Brett Pine here on Cougar Sports Saturday. Brett, we really appreciate the time discussing the history of Media Day. I know we're looking forward to coming out on Thursday in person. It's going to be fantastic to be there on site, on location. So excited that BYU is granting us that access because Just another sign that normalcy is continuing. So we're excited about that, Brett.
Thanks, Mitch. That's the one thing that we were really trying to, this year it took a little longer to get to where we could announce our plans because of all those types of issues and things that we're trying to do to still stay safe. But return to that. And we're also looking forward to marking this as an opportunity to be in person for the first time with you guys in a long, very long time. And looking forward to having a full capacity at the stadium coming up this fall at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. So a lot of good things coming ahead.
He's Brett Pine with BYU Football, Director of Communications for the BYU Football Program and part of the BYU Athletics Communications staff. Brett, we always appreciate the time, and we'll see you Thursday.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. Thanks, Matt.
That's Brett Pine here on Cougar Sports Saturday. Always appreciate Brett, and thank him for all the work he helps us with getting interviews on the show like Kalani and players. It's always great, so we appreciate him. And looking forward to being down there on Thursday at BYU Media Day. Got to take a timeout. On the other side, we'll discuss some news from BYU summer camps. A lot of recruiting news happening for the Cougar football team. We'll hit on that and more. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday. It's Matt Biamonte and Mitch Harper. However and wherever you've listened, we appreciate it. And as always, download our podcast. If you missed any of the show, Cougar Sports Saturday, wherever you get podcasts, subscribe, leave a review. That'll help us make the show more tailored to you, because this show is by fans, for fans. It's in our show open, and we want to make sure we're getting you guys the best BYU content we can get you. This week, it's a little quiet. Well, it was quiet before the 12-team proposal to expand the playoff. But this week, down in Provo, it's camp week. I had a chance to go. I have a cousin who's starting to dabble into that. So he's eighth grader, plays football out in Bakersfield, Luke Biamonte. So we'll have to see what happens there. He's fast.
What's the frame looking like? What are we talking about? Height, weight? What are we looking at? Hand size? What are we talking?
I can give you foot size. And I think this is a good indicator because, look, I'm not a college athlete. I'm too small. That's always the knock on the Biamontes. Can they get the height? Same shoe size as me right now at 9.5.
Okay.
Eighth grader. So I think he's going to fill out to about 5'11", 6 foot, inside slot receiver. I think he's got a chance.
Perfect.
So he was down there. I went down there. I was watching the younger groups, but you get to see because players have such a big impact on it. Yeah. Got to see Jacob Conover running some 7-on-7s, Micah Harper, those guys. And one of the big storylines that came from camp was the 5-star out of Florida.
Yeah, Cormani McClain out of Lake Gibson, Florida, visited BYU, enjoyed his trip to BYU. All of his social media is decked out in BYU. And as we know, we know this as well as anyone, BYU fans, they show the love. When you're a hotshot recruit and you give BYU some love, Cougar fans are going to give you the love in droves. And, Cougar fans just been, showing the likes and the retweets. Kids love that. That is a thing. Recruits that are high profile, like this kid is a 5-star cornerback who's got offers from the who's who, name the top programs in college football. He's got an offer from them, including Alabama, the defending champs. He visited BYU. So Cormani McClain was there. BYU, of course, offered him. So it'll be interesting to see if they have any sort of chance to maybe be in the mix to recruit him. BYU's had guys like Najee Harris visit, Mike Juarez back in the day, Manti Te'o, things like that. They also offered a 2022 quarterback. So this December, they could potentially sign. That's noteworthy because BYU, this past recruiting class, they did not sign a QB, Matt. So they got to get a QB in this class. Trayson Bourget, he was once a Arizona commit, University of Arizona. He's from the state of Arizona, not a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But he's a kid that's got some interest from Northwestern, SMU, and BYU. He wants to commit before his senior year of high school, which is this August, September. So there could be a chance BYU, that could be the guy to keep an eye on as far as the signal caller of this class for BYU. And we know how getting a quarterback late in the recruiting cycle, that worked out pretty nicely with Zach Wilson back in the day. So I think, he's a name to keep an eye on. And also Ty Nacua, the youngest brother to the Nacua brothers, Puka, Samson, Kai, and Isaiah. Ty Nacua, going to be a wide receiver for Temp View. He got an offer as well. So BYU making sure to take care of the legacy kids. That is a huge component. I like what BYU's doing with the
You know what job. My biggest takeaway, though, was from my visit to BYU camps? Besides, I loved watching Ayam Jack DeMooney drive the golf cart around. That was great.
That's awesome.
I love seeing that. is how Jacob Conover does not have the worst sunburn in the world. So he ran the whole thing, no shirt and just a backwards hat. And I'm like, dude, are you either layered on the 70 SPF or I don't know how you're getting toasted, because those are long days at camp. That's not like you show up for an hour and goof off. Like, those are, I think it starts like at 9:30, 10, and you go for 5, 6, 7 hours in the heat.
Man, that's impressive. You ever go to a BYU camp as a kid?
No, I never
did. Not you? Basketball, football? No. I went to basketball camp one time, and I think I led my team.
Oh, jeez. No. Here we go.
No.
I led my team to a camp championship.
No, we did get a championship. It was the 14.
Yes, I knew it.
13-year-olds. Jared Jensen, former big man, dapped me up. He's like, kid, nice job. I had my Kobe 2s on, the white and yellow
Adidas.
Shoes. Yep, the Adidas. Kobe 2s.
The bricks.
I was very proud of those. I remember that vividly. It was one of my favorite summers of my life, going to BYU basketball camp. It's like, I'm going to make it. I'm going to be a BYU hooper. And then, well, I realized I didn't grow much. I just stayed at 6'1". So I didn't get to like 6'6". But anyway, it was my one experience, a couple experiences with BYU's basketball camp.
It was fun. I think BYU does a great job with these camps, because they got like,
oh, yeah.
Right now they're wrapping up kids camp. I can't remember what they call it.
Cub camp.
Yeah. That's what it is. Just a lot of fun. I think it's a great thing that BYU does. And also I think it helps, you know, it's a recruiting tool too. So
for sure. Great. And I think the last week seeing father's sons, Brian Santiago, three clap or three dap. I can't remember what they called it, but it was cool just seeing everyone engage in that. It was
totally
great to see. We got to take a break, though. Traffic and weather coming up next, and then also some BYU quarterback talk. A college football analyst is very high
weekly
on Jaren Hall.
Quarterback,
we'll discuss that next.
Quarterback Sports Saturday up next.
Cougar Sports.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday, hour number 3. A few more segments to go here on June 12th. Spent a lot of time talking about college football expansion. That's a few years still down the road. Earliest it could be is 2023. But it's inevitable, and there's pros and cons, and we'll have many weeks and years to discuss how it's going to shake out. We're 12 weeks away from BYU in Arizona, and we got to ramp up the quarterback conversation here, because BYU really hasn't had this fierce of a competition. I'm trying to remember the last time. Was it maybe Max Hall and Cade Cooper back in the 2007 season? I mean, because when you think about the changes in quarterbacks over the years, the Taysom Hill thing was inevitable, right? Because that was Riley Nelson's last year. That was going, and Taysom saw some time in some special packages. That was going to be handed over. And if he doesn't get hurt, it probably gets handed over a lot sooner than Riley would have ever wanted to. And then from there, Tanner Mangum gets that, you know, taste his freshman year. So you knew, even though Zach pushed, you knew that Tanner was kind of the next guy. And now we find ourselves in a situation where there was no next guy after Zach. And I don't mean it as there's not an option, because there's great options. I just mean there wasn't that natural, okay, it's you, it's your turn now, because BYU's in a competition, a legitimate three-man competition with three very different skill sets between those guys. And so I think it's time here on the show, Mitch, to really put that at the forefront of football, because that is a huge storyline, this position at BYU. But also, I think nationally, we've seen this in some of the preseason magazines, Mitch. This is a position battle that has national attention.
It does. Because I think BYU is an intriguing national storyline for the college football pundits, not for the casual college football fan, but I think for college football analysts and people that kind of have some influence and sway in the sport. I think they're kind of going to keep a close eye on BYU, because they're thinking, you know, was it just a byproduct of the bad schedule? Can they follow it up without Zach Wilson? Can they still put up a big offense? And a guy like Jaren Hall, who I think we kind of feel like he's probably the best bet. If you're going to, you know, forecast the field, the three quarterbacks, Jaren Hall, Baylor Romney, Jacob Conover. It just makes all the sense in the world that Jaren Hall is probably going to be that number one quarterback. Well, there's a college football analyst. His name's Emory Hunt. We got a piece up on KSLSports.com about this. He's worked with CBS Sports and does some great football content on his website, footballgameplan.com. He writes a tweet. If quarterback Jaren Hall can play the whole season for BYU, watch out. He's the truth. Pretty impressive praise. Like, just like for a guy that's following college football on a national level, like for him to go out on the limb and just say Jaren Hall. So I reached out to him. I said, what do you see in Jaren Hall's game that stands out? What do you like about him? He says he's got the complete game, athletic, mobile, strong arm, and can make every throw on the field. That's what he told me via text. And then I said, Aaron Roderick obviously promoted to offensive coordinator. He wants to keep the same offense intact. How do you feel this offense fits Jaren Hall? He said, the playbook doesn't have to change as he can do everything Wilson can do.
That's high praise. And look, I think the reason you can come to that conclusion, Mitch, is we've talked about this before. I've compiled Jaren Hall's numbers in those two games he played back in 2019. Here's his numbers. Just a little refresher on Jaren Hall. 27 of 39, 69% completion, 362 yards, one passing TD, three rushing TDs, no turnovers, rushing 6 yards per carry. I mean, if you were to put that throughout an entire season, you're having similar numbers to Zach Wilson. Now, more rushing touchdowns than Zach and maybe not quite as many passing touchdowns, but still, 69% completion percentage is outstanding in college football.
No
taking
question.
Care of the football, putting points on the board. I think BYU wins that game against South Florida if he stays healthy, and he was getting sacked a lot. So there was some serious pressure on him, but he had that nice touchdown pass to Dax Mill in that game. Health is obviously an issue, but when you look at the good from Jaren Hall, I think for sure right now he's got the highest ceiling of the three in the competition. Now, Jacob Conover, he's so new, he's so young, we can't put a ceiling on him, so we don't know. But Jaren Hall, I think, just with that athletic ability, that dual threat ability, he makes the offense potentially the most dynamic.
Well, and I think also, too, Matt, with Jaren Hall, he sacrificed baseball this past spring. And we've had, you know, we talked to, like, Mike Littlewood, the BYU baseball coach, and he's even said in the past that if Jaren Hall was completely committed to baseball, he'd probably be a pro prospect. He has that potential in the sport of baseball. Like, he could be a pro if he was dedicated 365 to baseball. So with that in mind, I don't feel like Jaren Hall would completely sacrifice baseball if he was viewed as a potential pro in that sport for football if there wasn't some sort of feeling like, you know what, you got a great chance to be that starter. And, you know, remember, too, in 2019, when Jaren Hall was healthy, he was the number two quarterback. Baylor Romney was three. So this coaching staff, which pretty much the quarterbacks have been ran by Aaron Roderick from the get-go. When Jaren Hall stepped foot, Aaron Roderick's been the QB coach. Baylor Romney stepped foot on campus, Aaron Roderick's been the QB coach. He knows these guys literally since day one. Like, for 4 years now, Aaron Roderick has had these guys in his quarterback room. He knows them well. I think that's got to help the potential for this offense. Not to necessarily be a top 10 offense, but whether it's Jaren Hall or Baylor Romney, I feel like there's a feeling of confidence in these guys. Like, they know what they have at the quarterback position now that Zach Wilson's gone. It's kind of like Taysom Hill a little bit, where Sean Payton's seen rep after rep after rep with Taysom Hill. He knows, and there's a confidence where the outside looking in sees it and goes, well, you lost Zach Wilson, it's completely done. Whereas I think Aaron Roderick's thinking, you know, it's tough to replace him, yes, but these guys are pretty dang good in their own right, too.
Yeah, and I think what's great here is you've got options. This isn't a scenario where, you know, you might have to roll out. You hit the transfer portal, you hope that pans out, or you roll out a young buck and you don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Like, whether it's Baylor, Jaren, or Jacob, personally, I think it's Baylor and Jaren. I'm not reporting this. I just, when I logically think about this competition, if I were to put myself in that situation, the first opportunities would be to Jaren and Baylor. And then if they didn't perform or injury came, then you can go to Conover. I come back to that 2018 season so much, where Zach Wilson got so much praise, and we think he's the future, but it's not quite your time yet. And Tanner got the first crack, and the offense wasn't performing like they needed to, and then they moved to Wilson. I could see that happening to Conover. I hope that doesn't happen because I don't want BYU to struggle and lose games. I hope whoever wins the job sure. wins, but I could see that happening. I just struggle to see Conover from day one. That doesn't mean he doesn't have the ability. That doesn't mean he couldn't do it. I just think a first opportunity is Romney or Hall. And then I also come back to this, Mitch. We had Coach Roderick on our show, what, April, I think?
Yeah.
You can go and listen to this interview if you want to on our podcast feed, where he's like, we can't, you know, the days of winning football games where the quarterback manages the offense and you just eke your way to a win, they're gone. You have to be explosive. We're going to do the same. We want to do the same stuff as we did last year, pushing the ball down the field, scoring a lot of points. And I think the quarterback that most closely resembles Zach Wilson is Jaren Hall. And so you can probably run out a lot of the same playbook. Now, Coach Clark has also told us every year the playbook's fluid. You tweak, you add things, you take things out depending on personnel. But you can do a lot of the same stuff you did with Zach that you did with Jaren, especially from a dual threat read option situation.
And I think, too, with Jacob Conover, if you did start him, I feel like it's a ride or die type situation. Like, you do not bench him at any cost. Like, if you get blown out by Utah, you can't go to Jaren because then you've rattled the confidence of the freshman.
Yep.
And then you've shaken up everything. You cannot, if Jacob Conover wins the job, he is head and shoulders by a mile better than Jaren Hall and Baylor Romney. But then you're committing to him like it is
for
ride or die.
Or four
like,
years.
He is the guy. You cannot go away from him because we've seen young quarterbacks get ruined in other college programs in the past. Like, just like even John Beck has talked about this, how back in 2003, you know, when he started, and it's just like it was this kind of quarterback roulette. Some weeks it was Todd Mortensen or it was Matt Berry, and it played with your emotions and it kind of hindered the development. If you go with the freshman, you got to roll with him through thick and thin. The adversity, if you have some tough losses, you have to roll with him. And BYU, that with Jake Heaps, it was kind of like every other possession. And they kept going back and forth, and then Riley got hurt, and then it was green light for Jake Heaps. But then when the first sign of adversity early in his sophomore year, they bailed on him, and it just rattled him completely, and it was over.
Yep.
So you have to be committed to a young guy, whereas a little bit older veteran with Jaren Hall, who's still young. I mean, he's only got two starts ahead of Jacob Conover. But still, like you there's
but those are two starts, two road starts,
right.
Too.
But it's still, what I'm saying is, like, he's been around the program for 4 years. You could, if Jaren's not performing, you can go to Baylor or you can go to Conover.
Yep.
And that's a little bit understandable if he's not performing. Whereas Conover, if you start him, he has to be the guy, or else you're going to ruin his development.
Yep.
In my
yep.
opinion,
yeah, that's a great point, and you can't mess with that because whether you prefer Hall or Romney, because the fan base is split. I don't feel like there's a consensus.
Good point.
There's not a consensus. This is the guy. We don't want this other guy. I think it's pretty split, and it's going to take the full competition to see who wins that job. But with Conover, you worry a little bit about the transfer portal situation. And here's the other thing too. Conover is the future for sure. He's that next guy, and whether you play him this year or not, that's not going to change. But you don't want to – I think you just bring up a great point. You don't want to mess with that. Conover's time is going to come, I guess, is what I'm getting to.
And the great thing is Conover can redshirt and be a freshman next year again for the third year in a row. He can be a freshman again. That's the luxury of the COVID year and with the ability to play him in four games this year. I mean, I think Conover's got the highest potential out of all of them. I do. I think Conover is big time. But he's got to be significantly better than guys that have been in Aaron Roddick's program for 4 years. That's just valuable what Jaren Hall and Romney have seen and witnessed in the way that they've consumed the playbook and the way that Aaron Roddick communicates to them. They understand each other. They've been around it for 4 years. Like, both of those guys have been around this program for a long time. That's valuable, and I think that's why Jaren Hall, to me, is BYU's starting quarterback, I feel. When it comes to fall camp, I think he's going to ultimately win this job, and we're going to see him against Arizona, but it's going to be a great quarterback competition. I hope we get to see it in fall camp.
Yeah, cannot wait. So we'll have that covered, and it kind of all starts with Media Day. I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk to these guys and get a little bit more on what they've been doing this summer. So Media Day, Thursday, we'll have you covered from head to toe. We do have one more segment, though, here on this show, and we'll do that next. So don't go anywhere. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back into Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. It's the final segment of the program. Just a reminder, coming up on Thursday,
BYU Football Media Day. We're going to have coverage on KSLSports.com. So follow us on all the social medias, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, KSLSports.com. And there's going to be great stuff at BYU Media Day from both us. And also, BYU is going to put out some great stuff. They're going to have their State of the Program at 9 a.m. They're also going to do a pretty cool history of the offense of BYU football at like 1 p.m. So check out that. It's going to be a lot of fun. BYU Football Media Day down in Provo. We'll be on location. A lot of social media content. There will be some good content that we'll share next Saturday on the program. But right now, Matt, we got to get to a segment that you love because of this music right there. The Hurry Up. It's a quick look at all the stories that we might have missed here in the world of BYU sports. And we start things off with some baseball news. Andrew Pintar, named the college freshman All-American team. So congrats to Pintar. BYU baseball finished the season pretty strong under Mike Littlewood.
Yeah, and we were talking earlier, we've been watching the College World Series here at broadcast. How cool would it be to see BYU baseball in that? So congrats to him. That's awesome. Let's go to the Director's Cup, Mitch. BYU ranked sixth in the Director's Cup winter standing. So we touched on this a little bit earlier, but it is really just outstanding, the depth and quality of the Brigham Young Athletic Department. I don't know if it gets enough praise, just how great, you know, Tom Homo has done overseeing that entire thing.
Well, I think also the WCC has elevated the Olympic sports.
Yep.
And the Mount West Conference, I don't recall this success in all the volleyballs and just all from start to finish, like the entire academic year, all these teams are making a dent, not only in their conference, but nationally, too. Like, every BYU sport is in the mix in the NCAA tournaments. It's great to see. And this year, with all the sports pretty much taking place in the spring, it was a busy time. Like, everywhere you looked, these Olympic sports were in the NCAAs. And just a testament, again, to the growth of BYU athletics. Now, and when if the football program continues to evolve and men's basketball continues to, on their positive trajectory, good days are ahead, I think, for BYU sports. They can continue and capitalize on this momentum. Speaking of BYU football, they added a new piece to the 2021 roster. Former East High linebacker, Viliami Tasinga. This dude's a hard hitter, man. He is a hard-hitting linebacker. He was on the same defense as Siaki Ika, who's on Baylor, former LSU defensive lineman. He had 153 tackles his senior year at East High. Could be a lineman potentially eventually in his BYU career, but this is what's crazy, Matt. He signed Viliami Tasinga. He signed with BYU in 2018, gray shirts, and then goes on a mission. He was in the same recruiting class as Zach Wilson. So Zach Wilson's already in the NFL. Viliami Tasinga hasn't even gone through a college practice yet.
Wow.
Amazing. Like the world of BYU, yep. The juggling of the roster is a difficult deal. It goes beyond just a spreadsheet. But Viliami Tasinga joins BYU football program for 2021 and beyond.
Heading back to the Olympic sports, hitting the track and field. BYU has its first BYU sprinter to advance to the 400-meter final since 1964, that being Michael Bluth. He ran a 45.78 in the 400-meter. What an accomplishment. And just, man, track and field is pretty intense. So I got to admit, I didn't know much before I called my first track and field championship back in 2020, believe it or not, right before the pandemic. But it is a lot of fun, and that is quite the accomplishment, Mitch.
How often does that guy get Arrested Development jokes? Michael Bluth, there's money in the banana stand. Like, how often does he get that thrown his way?
Often.
Yep. Guaranteed. He's probably fed up with that. He's probably mad at us. I'm sorry, Michael. I had to bring it up. When I heard that name, I just instantly thought of Bluth. But anyway.
All right, that is the Hurry Up. That's how we wrap it up here on the show. A lot of fun to be back in studio with you, Mitch. So that'll do it here. Thanks to Mitch, myself, Dallin Graff, our producer, our board op, Dave Meekum. This has been Cougars Sports Saturday. Next week we'll have a recap of Media Day. So have a great weekend. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.